This is the IELTS listening test. You will hear a number of different recordings, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. There will be time for you to read the instructions and questions, and you will have a chance to check your work. All the recordings will be played once only. The test is in four parts. At the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the answer sheet. Now turn to part one.
You are going to listen to a conversation between two friends who are discussing the organization of a party. As you listen, answer the questions. Write no more than three words for each answer. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. You can see that the first question has been completed for you as an example. The part of the conversation relating to this example will now be played for you.
Hi, Matt. Right on time.
Have you been waiting long?
5 minutes.
The buses were held up on the high street. Otherwise, I would have been early.
Yeah, there's something wrong with them today.
You can see that Caroline has been waiting for 5 minutes. Now the test will begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 5.
Hi, Matt. Right on time.
Have you been waiting long?
5 minutes.
The buses were held up on the high street. Otherwise, I would have been early.
Yeah, there's something wrong with them today.
Yes, I think so. Okay, what should we do? Should we go and have a coffee?
Yeah, that would be nice. There's that place on the corner over there. It does really nice coffee and cakes and things, and at this time it's usually very quiet, so we'll be able to talk.
Okay, let's go there then.
So, when's the party going to be?
Well, it has to be at the end of September, before we all leave for university.
We've plenty of time then. We don't go for another 5 weeks, do we?
Well, we haven't really got that much time, if you think about it. There are only a couple of weeks at the beginning of September, when all of us are around.
Oh, yes, I forgot. Nazrin, Phil and Nikki and all that lot have gone off on holiday.
And I'm away for 2 weeks from tomorrow.
So, what does that leave us then?
As far as I know, we're all here between the 19th and the 30th of September. Will Sandra be around then? I know that she has a whole string of family birthdays at that time, and she might not be available.
Well, let's make a note of that, and we can contact her about it.
OK. Shall we settle for the 21st of September then?
What day is the 21st?
It's a Saturday. Is that OK?
That's fine.
Before the conversation continues, look at questions 6 to 10. As you listen to the second part of the conversation, answer questions 6 to 10. For these questions, there are three alternatives, A, B and C. Decide which alternative is the most suitable answer and circle the correct letter.
And now for the tricky bit. Where are we going to hold it?
Well, I spoke to Nikki last week and she volunteered her place as they have a huge house and garden.
Oh, fantastic. Will her parents be around?
Yeah, I think so, but she said they won't mind.
Oh, right. Well, my parents wouldn't like it at all.
Nor mine.
But is it definite?
Yes. When I spoke to her, she said it was definitely on. I'll just have to confirm the dates with her. We thought it would be one weekend in September, so I'll just have to make sure that that one is okay. One thing Nikki suggested, we could have a daytime party, as we could be outside if the weather is fine.
Oh, wow. How far out does she live?
It's not that far. Do you know where West Road crosses the bridge?
Yeah.
It's the first house on the right, with that huge drive up to the front door.
Oh, right. I know exactly where it is. The road is off the A33 and runs north, then over the bridge and first on the right. I know it. Ah, the place is amazing. You know it has a big swimming pool. Does everyone know where she lives?
Most of her friends do, but not all. But it doesn't matter, as we can put this map Nikki sent me in with the invitation.
How shall we do the invitation?
We can do it on the computer. I can scan the map and we'll put it all onto an A4 page.
Is this the address? Can I just write the address down? It's 93 West Road and I'll take the phone number. It's 477130.
Right. There's one other thing.
Yes?
We're all giving £10 towards refreshments and food. There'll probably be a barbecue. Do you think that's enough?
Oh, right. Yeah, that's fine.
And everyone will have to help tidy up afterwards, including the boys.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
You will hear a talk on New Zealand radio about an art sale which is being held to raise money for charity. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 13 on page 10. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 13.
One of the most anticipated art events in Christchurch is the charity art sale organised this year by Neil Curtis. Neil, tell us all about it.
Well, Diane, this looks like being the biggest art sale yet. And the best thing about it is that the money raised will all go to charity. So what you probably want to know first is where it is. Well, the pictures will be on view all this week, most of them at the Star Gallery in the shopping mall. But we have so many pictures this year that we're also showing some in the cafe next door. So do drop in and see them any day between 9 and 5. Now, if you're interested in buying rather than just looking, and we hope a lot of you will be, the actual sale will take place on Thursday evening, with sales starting at 7:30. Refreshments will be available before the sale, starting at 6:30. We've got about 50 works by local artists showing a huge range of styles and media, and in a minute I'll tell you about some of them. You're probably also interested in what's going to happen to your money once you've handed it over. Well, all proceeds will go to support children who are disabled, both here in New Zealand and also in other countries. So you can find an original painting, support local talent, and help these children all at the same time.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 14 to 20 on page 11. Now listen and answer questions 14 to 20.
Now, let me tell you a bit about some of the artists who have kindly agreed to donate their pictures to the charity art sale. One of them is Don Studley, who has a special interest in the art sale because his 5-year-old daughter was born with a serious back problem. After an operation earlier this year, she's now doing fine, but Don says he wants to offer something to help other less fortunate children. Don is totally self-taught and says he's passionate about painting. His paintings depict some of our New Zealand birds in their natural habitats. One relative newcomer to New Zealand is James Chang, who came here from Taiwan 9 years ago at the age of 56. Mr. Chang had 13 exhibitions in Taiwan before he came to live here in Christchurch, so he's a well-established artist, and art has been a lifelong passion for him. His paintings are certainly worth looking at. If you like abstract pictures with strong colour schemes, you'll love them. Natalie Stevens was born in New Zealand, but has exhibited in China, Australia, and Spain. As well as being an artist, she's a website designer. She believes art should be universal, and her paintings use soft colours and a mixture of media. Most of her pictures are portraits, so watch out, some of them may even be friends of yours. And then we have Christine Shin from Korea. Christine only started to learn English 2 years ago when she arrived in New Zealand, but she's been painting professionally for over 10 years, and she sure knows how to communicate strong messages through the universal language of art. She usually works from photographs and paints delicate watercolours, which combine traditional Asian influences with New Zealand landscapes, giving a very special view of our local scenery. Well, that's all I have time to tell you now, but as well as these four, there are many other artists whose work will be on sale, so do come along on Thursday. We accept cheques, credit cards, or cash. And remember, even if you don't buy a picture, you can always make a donation.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
You will hear a student called Sarah talking to her college tutor about some research she has to do as part of her course. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 27. Now listen and answer questions 21 to 27.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
So, you want to talk about your research project?
That's right. I want to find out how many people use the Tourist Information Office and what they think of the service they get.
Interesting. Have you written your proposal yet?
No, that's what I wanted to ask you about. What should I include? Someone said I should make a list of my aims first.
Well, I don't know about a list, A statement of aims is the correct term. It's just a quick summary of what you hope to get out of the project.
OK. And should I include other documents I've prepared? Like the questionnaire? I'm still working on that.
I can check that later, but I think it's good to prepare an information sheet for participants. It would help you to think about interview methods. It'd be good to see that soon.
Oh, right. And I want the project to have statistical data, not just to be a collection of opinions.
That's good. So that should be clear from the proposal too.
Great. So what else must I include in the proposal? Or are some things optional?
OK. Some things that people normally put in a research proposal don't really apply to you, like any costs involved. That can be really important in some research projects, but as we don't have a budget, it's not something you need to include. Any costs have to come out of your own pocket, I'm afraid.
Yes, I understand that.
But I do need to know your criteria for choosing who to interview. I've got to check that you're using good sampling principles, for example.
Sure. And what about the way I'm going to analyse my findings?
That's not essential at the proposal stage on this project, but if you've got some ideas, include them, because it could save time later.
OK. And do I need to make it clear how the report will be organised?
Oh, I'm going to be giving you a template to use, so there's no need to go into that in the proposal.
Great, thanks.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 28 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 28 to 30.
Actually, another thing we could discuss now is making sound recordings of interviews.
Oh, right. Do I have to record them all? I could try to get as many as possible, but it'd be rather expensive.
Yes, don't worry. You only need a few chosen randomly just to give an idea of how the interviews are going. You can send one in each time you update me on your progress.
OK. How often should I do that? I haven't done a timetable for the interviews yet, but they'll be spread over 3 or 4 weeks, with about 200 in total. I reckon on doing 20 a day.
Let me know how you're getting on at the end of each day's interviewing then, whether you've had any problems or not. It can be a lonely job.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
And what about the confidentiality of participants? Because that can cause problems.
Well, I'm getting them to sign a consent form. It says that I'll only use the information for my research, that I won't pass it on to anyone else. But that's the only promise I'm making. They have to give me their names and agree to their data being stored on the college computer network.
That sounds good. You won't put names in your report, I know, and the data will all get deleted at the end of the year, but we don't promise any of that.
Sure.
That is the end of part 3. Now it turns to part 4.
You will hear a talk given by Dr. Miranda James. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 35. Now, listen carefully to the talk and answer questions 31 to 35.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the first in a series of talks we have arranged for the Overseas Students Association this semester. Dr. James has very kindly agreed to speak to us today on the topic of public speaking, and judging from the large numbers of you here, it's clearly a subject of great interest and relevance. Dr. James.
Hello. It's good to see so many of you here, and hopefully what I'm going to tell you will be useful to you both here at the university and in your future employment. Many people avoid speaking publicly, by which I mean in front of, say, 10 or more people. Not because they lack the ability, but mainly because they lack confidence, which is really only due to lack of practice. Today, as a consequence of the influence of television, audiences expect speakers to be relatively brief and to the point, in addition to being well-informed and interesting or entertaining. Probably the most important part of public speaking is what you do beforehand, by which I mean preparation. This includes practical details, such as knowing precisely what your topic is and exactly how long you are expected to talk for. You should also plan the content thoroughly. A good strategy is to write out the content as you intend to say it, and then make brief notes, preferably on small cards, which you use to talk from. This way you sound more natural. You incorporate pauses while you look at your notes, and you can then look at your audience while you are speaking. Never read your speech without looking at the audience. Eye contact is a very important part of communicating with an audience. So deliberately move your head and look around at your audience. Pauses are important, as most people, when they are nervous, tend to rush through their speech.
Now you have some time to look at questions 36 to 40. Now listen and answer questions 36 to 40.
Practice speaking slowly. This gives you more time to pronounce your words correctly. It's always easier for your audience to listen to someone whose speaking is clear and calmly paced, so that they can understand the ideas being explained. And the bigger the group, the more slowly you should speak. Remember to project your voice, speaking clearly to the person furthest away from you. It's a good idea to rehearse and record yourself. Pay attention to your intonation when you listen to yourself. It's even harder if you're speaking in a second language, I would imagine. But there's nothing worse than listening to a flat, monotonous voice. So try to vary your tone and rhythm. This will add meaning to your words. Lastly, pay attention to both your posture and your gestures. A confident person stands or sits in a small group with their head up, chin out, and shoulders back. Try to avoid scratching or fiddling with your hair or beard or pens, jewellery and so on. These movements can distract and irritate your audience. Yet you may be unaware of them yourself. Another reason for rehearsing, preferably with feedback from a friend or better still, on video. I hope these few tips will make your experience of speaking in public a little easier. Remember, practice makes perfect.
That is the end of part four.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.